It's time to talk Mariners baseball.
Holy smokes!
With spring training just around the corner, we are geared up for baseball.
This is at the wall, and it is gone into the bullpen for a two-run homer. Some serious hang time from Nelson Cruz.
It's the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Sports app.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Hot Stove. We just asked you the question, tonight's trivia question: what were Mike Zunino's home run and RBI totals for his month of Zunino? It was a simply spectacular month for the Mariners catcher. And for the answer, how about we go to the audio vault?
Goodwill into his motion. Here's the pitch. Swung on and drilled to left field. This is crushed. This is back. This is gone. Zunino continues. Mike Zunino, his 10th home run this month, his 11th of the season, and he has given the Mariners a 1-0 lead. For Mike Zunino, RBI 31 in the month of June, and that one was smashed.
10 home runs, 31 driven in. Jen Heward in Seattle, congratulations for being tonight's winner. Only four Mariners at any position have ever had more RBIs in a single month. Edgar Martinez and Mike Blowers, 33 in 1995. August of that year. Mike, you remember that month?
It was a pretty important month for us in the organization. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was one of those things where we talk about momentum all the time. A lot of that was going on that month. I mean, you could see it. Edgar also driving in 33 runs in the same month. And so we won a lot of ball games. We scored a lot of runs. It was fun. Great lineup.
Buehner, 95 as well, did the same thing. And the winner, Jen Heward, wins the Microstructure Mariners blanket. So good stuff for Jen. Zunino is obviously somebody that we'll be talking a lot about during the course of spring training. We saw some incredible things, as we just heard, over the course of last season. It still had its waves, as I think probably any player will have. And I think Mike's probably shown that he may be more than some players will have their ups and downs. But for Mike, at the end of the season, the numbers were better than I think any of us could have possibly hoped for.
They're top three in a lot of categories offensively for the catchers. And I think a lot of people look, well, it was just Zunino. No, it wasn't. He did cool off in July, but he came right back in August and September. So I think at times, Mike, it's almost as important to see that adjustment and see you have that little struggle after you come back and pull out of that than it is anything else.
I think it'll be interesting to watch him this year and where he goes with all this. I think he took a big step forward. A lot of times for myself, Shannon, I'll look at guys when they are in that struggle that you talked about. He was so hot and things seemed so easy for him. And then he had that struggle. But the thing that was encouraging for me is he was able to fight his way back out of it. And maybe that consistency he had that last month and a half, 2 months of the season is something that we'll see more of from him. The most difficult thing, and I've had to take a step back a few times myself, is because when you see Mike and the things that he's capable of doing, I think sometimes the expectations for him, I don't want to say too hard, but maybe that we're expecting it too fast. And he's had to go through a lot, especially when you consider the position that he plays. And he has things that you cannot teach, power being one of them, and his type of power. It's just a matter of squaring it up more often. And I think he was on his way to doing that last year, and I think he'll take another step forward. And if he does that, you're talking about a pretty special player.
What do you think this offseason is like for him? Can he finally relax a little bit?
My hope is that he's excited.
Mentally relaxed.
Yeah, my hope is that this year, unlike the previous couple of years when he had all these different things he was going to have to work on and come to spring training and try to win a job, my hope is that this year he enjoyed the process of the winter more so that when he comes to spring training, there's an energy about him and a confidence I think that he's going to need, and I think that's a possibility for him. Because if he's that way and he does well early, I think, again, he's going to be a big part of what this team can do, because if you look at the lineup overall, he's going to be towards the bottom of the lineup. And if you're getting that kind of production out of the bottom of your lineup, you're in pretty good shape. And Mike is certainly capable of that.
And let's not forget, he worked with 40 different pitchers as well.
Yeah, that's the whole point to it all. It's a difficult thing. And I think because you can see the raw ability, our expectations of how quickly he should evolve with the draft status and everything that goes with him, and then what you physically see, I think sometimes is unreal. And maybe that's been the case with Mike. And maybe this is just the path that he is on. But once he gets there, he's going to be special.
You know, for those who forgot, Mike ended the season hitting .251, 25 bombs on the year, an OPS of .840. I mean, this
is special.
Huge numbers
for
a guy when you look at some of the struggles earlier in his career, and an absolute breakout season. Will be exciting to see what Mike Zunino
and trying to get 40 pitchers through the season.
It's a lot to carry.
It is.
It's a lot to carry. Well, we are just underway. Second hour of the Hot Stove. We'll be talking with Larry Stone for a couple of segments about the Mariners in 2018 and also Edgar Martinez and his journey to Cooperstown, hoping that becomes official not long from now. But when we return, we'll have a chance to talk with one of the younger starting pitchers in the Mariners rotation. That is Andrew Moore. Former Beav joins us after this quick break.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
The windup and the 0-2 pitch, and it's strike three called. He got him looking. A fastball on the outside edge. Andrew Moore striking out Judge for his first strikeout of the night.
Welcome back inside the Hot Stove. Aaron Goldsmith, Mike Flowers, and Shannon Dreyer. And joined on the line by Mariners starting pitcher Andrew Moore. Andrew, on the caravan, how are things going? Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. It's, going really well, just getting through the off season and out here on the caravan with Altavilla and Sims and Brian Hunter and some of those guys, and it's been a blast so far these last couple days.
Now, are you spending the off season in your home state of Oregon once again this year?
Yeah, I'm living back in Eugene and then go up to Oregon State and train up in Corvallis quite a bit. But, mostly back in Eugene, working out and throwing and everything back there.
What was your workout like this winter? When did you start throwing off a mound? What were some of the things that you did?
We gave about a month off of just doing nothing, letting the body rest, especially in the first time playing through September. That last month was pretty tough physically getting through it, so hitting the reset button, and then I would say early November started really getting after it, and then early December started picking up a ball and slowly introducing throwing back into the program as well, and then been off the mound a couple times now, just some light work, so slowly getting more and more aggressive with that as the off season goes on, but just kind of slowly implementing everything back into the routine and getting ready for next year.
Now, it's not just September that was kind of new for you, a lot of firsts for you, your first big league call-up. How do you take that information and process it and kind of put it into a plan and what you need to do going forward when you have a whole off season to do that?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was, had some tough moments, and a lot of the guys were there and kind of gave me some pointers on how to get through it. But overall, it was a great experience and learned a ton, so. Now it just comes down to making the proper adjustments, like you said, and I learned some stuff about, how to prepare and, what I need to do to get my body ready for the start every 5 days. So that's something I just need to, hone in on and improve going into next year and try and keep the consistency as high as I can.
Andrew Moore is our guest, Mariners starting pitcher on the Hot Stove. I was curious, Andrew, when you made one of your first starts in the big leagues last season, it was against the Kansas City Royals, and when I was looking at kind of your career path and the recent run of the Royals, and as we all remember from last season, the team that we saw last year for Kansas City was basically their World Series team. And when they won the World Series, you were making your pro debut in Everett, and I was curious, when you are watching those guys win the World Series as you're just fresh out of Oregon State, and now you're facing Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas, did you feel, because you're in the big leagues and you're on a big league mound, do you feel automatically like a big leaguer, or is there still kind of this feeling of, hey, I'm still working into this? How do you remember specifically that day facing Kansas City?
Yeah, I'd never really thought about it in that aspect. That's pretty cool.
Well,
but
probably better you didn't think about that then. You can think about it now.
Exactly. No, yeah, that's a really tough lineup, and they have a bit of everything. They got speed, they got power from both sides, a lot of experience. But, you try to not think about that kind of stuff too much. In my first start facing Miggy, that was kind of a moment where I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. But, after that, it's just kind of locking into the scouting report and trying to stay focused and, those guys are obviously some of the best in the world, so you can't really, sway from your from your scouting report and the intense mindset that you have. But, that was a tough battle. That lineup's really good, especially facing them two or three times. They're so good at making adjustments that, you got to be on your toes and ready to make proper adjustments yourself. And, Z and Chooch and Scott were awesome with helping me through that process because, a lot of times in the minor leagues, you can just dominate with, one or two pitches throughout a whole game. But in the major leagues, they're so good at adjusting on the fly to what you're doing that you can't really do that for more than one or two times through the lineup.
One of the things that you talked about last year, Andrew, also it was execution. We may not always see it, but it may have been the right pitch, but maybe you missed a spot in a location. And the other thing you talked about was how guys up here typically aren't going to miss those mistakes. And as you think about that, on the execution side of it, is it more mechanical with you or more mental with you? Where are you at with that?
Yeah, mechanically is definitely a huge part of it, where you have to be able to repeat your delivery and, all those things. But also just the mentality, like you said, where, if you're trying to bust the fastball into some of the power hitters, you got to have full belief in yourself and in that pitch. If there's, any doubt that creeps in, that's where maybe you'll, leave one over the middle of the plate and won't quite have the same effectiveness as you want it to. So I would say both of those for sure play a huge role in that. And, those games are good and they hit mistakes, but you just got to be able to, keep them guessing, keep them off balance and, just kind of, mix up how you're approaching them.
Andrew, the Mariners made some kind of interesting moves, not with players so much in the offseason, but in staff. And you look at kind of the configuration that they have of the coaching staff right now, and one of the extra hitting coaches was taken and put on third base, and all of a sudden there's an extra pitching coach. And then they bring in a bullpen guy who also has experience in pitching coach in academy-type, kind of driveline-type settings. What is that going to do, you think, for the entire group to have those extra eyes, to have those extra philosophies, and to have just, it kind of divided up a little bit more rather than one guy just kind of having to take care of everybody?
Yeah, I think that'll be awesome just because, especially during the season, so often pitchers are split up where, you'll have a few starters throwing a bullpen, you'll have some relievers doing some flat ground work, you'll have, maybe some other guys coming out a little bit later. So just having multiple sets of eyes that you can trust and you can work with on mechanics or mindset or a new pitch. I mean, that's going to be awesome having more resources. We're definitely going to be able to put up some runs. So I think, the more help we can get with the pitching and preventing runs aspect of the game will be the better. So I'm really excited to work with all the new minds we got and hopefully keep improving my game and lead to some more wins on the field.
I talked about it a lot last year when I had a chance to watch you pitch, and you seem with your body language out there that nothing bothers you. Did the game ever speed up on you?
Yeah, I'd say there was a couple starts where I felt like it was, and I would say that Yankee start was really the first time I felt it. A really good crowd, and they kind of were getting into it pretty good, and I felt like I was speeding up a little bit, so. Felt like once September came around, that was something I really wanted to focus on and talk to Stott and some of the other guys about, just learning when you feel yourself kind of tipping past that edge, I guess, of stepping off the mound, taking a deep breath, regathering your thoughts, and then making sure you're committed to, the next batter or the next pitch before you go up there, because, so often you can make that one pitch where you're not fully committed to or not fully there, and then that's the one that ends up, biting you in the butt and can affect an outing in a negative way. So you really got to make sure that, you're there for every pitch.
Andrew, what would Dr. Lorena Martin say about your diet on the caravan? Are they taking care of you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're feeding us really well.
Okay.
We're about to go eat some good food down here, so I think she'd be pleased with how they're treating us, for
well,
sure.
Well, she has Sean Grinley's numbers, so she's going to follow up, make sure everybody's got the right intake of everything. And by the way,
absolutely,
circle back to that Kansas City game, you went 8 innings. I know you're too humble to say that, but I'd say you handled that just fine. But, Andrew, we really appreciate you taking some time. It's good to catch up with you as always, and we look forward to seeing you down in Peoria.
Definitely. Thank you guys very much for having me. See you soon.
Likewise. Andrew Moore, Mariners starting pitcher, joining us here on the Hot Stove. When we come back, We're looking forward to this one. Larry Stone of the Times joins us. We're going to talk things all things Mariners in 2018, and also we're going to carve out a good chunk of time to talk about Edgar as well. Larry Stone on the other side.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreher, and Mike Flowers with you tonight on the Hot Stove, and we are very happy to welcome a good friend of ours and somebody that you no doubt read all the time, Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. Larry, it is good to talk to you as always, man. How are things?
I'm doing great. Great to talk some baseball with you guys.
Well, you know, first of all, Larry, I have to ask, did you ever have quite the professional gratitude than you did when writing the full feature on Kevin Krimen retiring? I mean, was that the greatest baseball writing you've ever done?
I think it's right up there. Yeah, definitely. And when you retire in 40 or 50 years,
well, you know what? The ironic thing is, you write this whole article on Kevin retiring, and Kevin's here tonight with us. I mean, he still hasn't retired. I mean, the column
is
a farce.
He's making me look like a liar.
Well, hey, we're very happy that you can give us some of your time this evening. We're eager to talk about the Mariners. We're gonna talk in the second segment with you about Edgar as well. But first of all, when you see this offseason for Jerry and the Mariners, it has been, as we were saying a little bit earlier tonight, it's been kind of eerily quiet recently, hasn't it?
It has, not just Jerry, but all throughout baseball. I mean, you look at the free agent list, and it's not that different from the one we started out with in November. So it's a little bit odd. There's a lot of different theories going on, but you'd think that Jerry would be the outlier there and go crazy like usual. But, you know, he's made a couple of moves, but you're right, it is kind of eerily quiet.
Larry, you kind of look at the offseason right now, and it's so different from past offseasons and so many different factors. You look at the game right now. I mean, we had Dr. Lorena Martin on earlier this show, and I know that you had an extensive sit-down with her earlier in the offseason, but so many changes for baseball and how it's everything that's behind the scenes. You look, you know, 10 years ago, there was one sabermetric team. Now every team is in on the numbers. And now the Mariners trying to push the boundaries with the high performance, the peak performance side of things. Players obviously work out differently in the off season than they did before. And lo and behold, now we're looking at an off season that's very different because it would appear that team strategies are different and how they're putting everything together. You kind of just sum up where baseball is right now and the change that we've seen. And, I mean, it seems only like a few years.
Yeah, you know, Moneyball, I think, kind of ushered in the new era in a way. It was all about finding market inefficiencies. And the A's were kind of the only ones doing it. They were at the forefront of it, and everyone kind of caught on to that. And now all the front offices are populated with analytics savvy, sabermetric, fluent people. And so, you know, Jeff Passan had an interesting article yesterday about why the market is frozen. Teams have figured out that it's not necessarily smart to pay big money contracts to guys when it's sort of a paradox of baseball that you reach free agency and get the big money after 6 years when you tend to be 30, 31 and hitting your decline years. And teams used to sort of overlook that and give out these big contracts, and they're just not doing it now because time has proven that those tend to be, particularly at the end of the deal, just not good for the team. So a lot of guys who thought they were going to get big contracts this year kind of hung out to dry and are still sitting out there. I think that's been the biggest change, has been the change in the front office and the influx of analytics and a different way of looking at things. And it's, to a large extent, been to the detriment of players as they hit free agency. You know, the gravy train the players were on for all those years may be nearing an end, or at least shifting anyway. You know, there's a lot of talk about when the next contract is up, that the players are going to have to maybe shift for earlier, you know, go for a free agency after 4 years or something like that, so the players are in their prime when they hit free agency.
cycles in baseball happen all the time. You know, you go from a four-man rotation to a five-man rotation. Larry, do you think we're going to see a six-man rotation? And with everything that we've seen over the last couple of years, and we're obviously really close to it here in Seattle with the injuries to the pitching, but the importance of the bullpens and how all of that's going to play out, and are they going to try to take more innings away from these guys that are starting just to keep them healthy?
Yeah, you know, I think, Mike, I think that's the trend that we're going in. You look at the teams that were in the World Series last year, the Astros won the World Series, and their innings leader, I think, had 153 innings for the season. I think there were only 10 guys in baseball who reached 200 innings. Can you imagine that? You know, when you were playing?
Right.
You know, I mean, there used to be, it was, people were wondering what happened to the 300-inning pitcher. Now it's what's happened to the 200-inning pitcher, because those innings are now being spread out to relievers with 13-man pitching staffs, which leaves you with a very limited bench. But, you know, I think that's part of sabermetrics, too. The numbers that show the third time through the lineup, the decreasing numbers for starters. So, you know, why do it? Why subject yourself to that when you can spread it out among fresh armed pitchers? So, you know, I think you're kind of right at the trend. You know, I still like the idea of a horse in your rotation, you know, vintage Felix kind of guy who will give you 220 innings, solid innings, and you can pencil that in every year. You know, maybe Paxton could do that this year, or you know, maybe, but I do think for now that the six-man rotation is probably going to be coming for some team, and fewer and fewer pitchers are going to be asked to go even six or seven innings. Maybe five, and the old five and dive might not have a pejorative connotation anymore.
In your opinion, when you see things like that, and obviously there's a lot of changes that have gone in this game over a very long period of time, but something like that, and you mentioned it, all of a sudden you're going to have 12, 13 guys out in the bullpen, you're having all these pitching changes, and in just your personal opinion, does it hurt, help, or does it make a difference as far as the overall health of the game?
I think, you know, I think it hurts in this respect. You know, baseball is fighting a battle of perception that it's a boring sport, that it's losing the young people. And when you get to the fifth or sixth innings and you have all those pitching changes, you know, lefty, righty, lefty, the game stops after one batter and then you change pitchers again. It just, it really, to me, it ruins the flow of the game. You know, I know there's been some talk of limitations. You know, that's one thing that's going to happen this year. There's going to be several things to speed up the game. They're trying to negotiate with the Players Association, but the commissioner has the power to just implement them unilaterally if the union doesn't agree with them. And there's been talk of like limiting the number of pitching changes per inning, things like that. And I don't necessarily think that would be a bad thing for the aesthetic pleasure of a game. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I don't like having pitching changes every few minutes. So in that regard, I don't think it's a good thing.
Larry Stone is with us here in the Hot Stove. Larry, in kind of broad strokes, as you have seen this offseason unfold for the Mariners, obviously the bullpen has been added to, the lineup has been added to as well. There is plenty of clamoring for the rotation and whether or not Jerry needs to add one of the high-priced free agents, if that's even a possibility for him. What do you make overall as to where the Mariners sit right now? If this was the team that the Mariners took to spring training, how are you feeling about it?
Well, I'm not feeling so good, to be frank. I mean, you look at the Astros in the division look almost, you know, insurmountable, having gotten now added Gerrit Cole to an already great rotation, Verlander and Keuchel and Morton, all those guys, and the great team that they have. So, I mean, if you're realistic, I think even Jerry has sort of acknowledged this year that they're going to be tough to catch. So you're going for a wild card, and then you've got, you know, the Red Sox and or Yankees, one team wins that division, and then one other one is going to be a tough team to beat out for a wild card spot. So, you know, it's going to be a tough road. And I just, you know, I like their I like their lineup with D. Gordon. I think that's a nice addition. Their bullpen is very solid. I just don't see the starting depth right now. You know, I know they're counting heavily on Erasmo and maybe Marco Gonzalez at the bottom of that rotation. But you need a lot of things to go right. You know, Paxton to stay healthy, Felix to make a comeback. You know, Leak looks, you know, Leak's a solid 3-4 kind of guy. But you're counting a lot on guys like Erasmo Ramirez and Marco Gonzalez. When you look at the competition, that's going to be tough.
Well, we want to talk with Larry a little bit more. We're going to step aside for a brief moment. When we come back, more with Larry Stone after this timeout.
Back to more of The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
In the expansion era that goes back to 1961, only three players have a better on-base percentage than Edgar Martinez: Barry Bonds, Frank Thomas, and Joey Votto. That's it for the last 56 years. Martinez's career OPS plus was 147. The precise park-adjusted OPS for that man, Willie McCovey. In fact, over each of their peaks, Martinez stacks up right alongside McCovey, a first ballot Hall of Famer. And even with Martinez playing mainly at DH and McCovey playing the field, Martinez had a higher average WAR in his 14-year run. Martinez was every bit as valuable as McCovey, a big-time slugger who made the 500 home run club when it meant something.
Now we can thank Brian Kinney of MLB Network for those nuggets on Edgar Martinez as we continue our conversation with Larry Stone. And, you know, Larry, you look at the numbers right now, and still there's a ways to go, no doubt about it. Under 50% of ballots have been received, but Edgar is at 80% right now. Of course, the threshold is 75.
81.
81.
Another vote came in the, yes, thank you, Kevin Kernan in New York.
Kevin?
He's 81 straight up right now.
Friend of the show, Kevin Kernan. You know, Stoney, first of all, before we kind of get into the candidacy of Edgar a little bit more, first and foremost, Larry, what is it that you make of just kind of the rapid rise? I mean, this is, I mean, if this comes to fruition and you get the sense that it certainly will, if not this year, next year, that this is beginning to feel more like justice than anything else.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable. You know, I happened to talk to Edgar today for a Sunday Story, and he admitted that he had pretty much given up hope a couple of years ago. You know, he was heading in the wrong direction. I think he was down to like 28%, and he had just come to the conclusion that it wasn't going to happen. And then there just kind of started to be this movement. You know, a lot of influential people, there's a lot of factors in my mind at work. There's a lot of influential people started advocating for him. The ballot cleared out a little. You know, the rule of 10 was hurting him. He was the, I think he was the 11th guy on a lot of people's ballots. You know, last year three got in, I think it was, so there was some more space, and then it just kind of builds up its own momentum, and, you know, he's come farther faster than Tim Raines did, who was about the same spot and got in on his last try, and, you know, Edgar's poised to get in, if not this year, certainly next year. You know, I'm more and more confident with each passing day that he's going to get in, and if you'd asked me that before the vote was announced last year, I would say he was an extreme long shot. And then he made a big rise last year and an even bigger rise this year. And now there's this, sort of this momentum that seems unstoppable, which is truly amazing.
We've seen a number of people, obviously, who have not voted for him in the past, and be it they're acknowledging the DH or be it they are acknowledging stats that they hadn't before, it's come to his benefit. Is there a player like that that you've kind of looked at a little bit differently the last couple of years?
Well, Larry Walker is one. You know, he's a guy I voted for early on, and then I stopped voting for him because my ballot just got too crowded, but I always wanted to. And, you know, the closer you look at him, the better he looks, I think. You know, he's sort of facing a bias like Edgar has the DH bias that he has to deal with. Larry Walker has the Coors Field bias that he has to deal with. People who say, oh, he's just a product of playing at Coors Field. But, you know, I think he was a great player. He was a great player in Montreal before he got to Coors Field. He was a great player on the road. Sure, it inflated his stats, but in my mind, he's a Hall of Famer, and I voted for him again this year. And he's going to make a huge jump this year as well. And he's got a few more years on the ballot, so he might get there as well.
Larry, obviously, we're all pulling for Edgar and want him to get in and want him to go in this year. And we've talked a lot about analytics and numbers and all the different things with Gar. But I'm just curious for yourself, as you take a step back from all of that and you think about Edgar and what you just saw yourself on the field, what comes to mind?
His consistency, I think, and just that sweet right-handed swing. You know, one of the best right-handers we've seen. You know, the clutch hit, the double. You know, that always comes to mind when I think of him. But just him, sort of just lashing line drives all over the field. And to me, he, you know, the statistics are great, but some players just pass that vision test, that sniff test. And for me, he does. You know, you knew that you were looking at an elite hitter when you were looking at Edgar Martinez. And I think the closer you look at the numbers, I think one thing that's helping him is that the comparison to David Ortiz. I think there's a sort of this the sense that Ortiz is a surefire Hall of Famer, first ballot guy. And when you really crunch the numbers, if you take out home runs and you take out World Series titles, Edgar's numbers blow David Ortiz's away in a lot of ways. And so if you're of the belief that Ortiz is going to go in, I don't see how you can keep Edgar Martinez out.
Well, Larry, you bring up the numbers. That reminds us of a conversation that Mike and I had a chance to have with Tim Kirchen during a spring training game last year where he referenced the numbers of Edgar.
He's a 300, 400, 500 guy for his career. There are like 18 of those guys in history. Then when you take those specific numbers and try to find people that have a higher average, higher on base, and a higher slugging than him, there are like 7 guys in Major League history that have better numbers than him. And I covered baseball significantly at the time of his prime. And, Mike, you know this. Mm-hmm. When you ask people, like, who are the best hitters in the American League, and Edgar Martinez's name always came up.
You know, you mentioned, Stoney, that there are guys that have kind of taken this as like a personal cause, like the Tim Raines thing. I mean, Tim Kirchen, one of the best in the business, kind of sounds like he has done that as well. Because when we talked to Tim about it, we kind of went into that conversation saying, you know, Tim, with the emphasis on the new numbers, right? This has got to give Edgar a case. And Tim kind of shot us down and said, guys, it doesn't matter if it's new numbers or old numbers or any kind of numbers. The numbers are great no matter what you're looking at. He's got to be in. I mean, that's kind of what we came away with.
Yeah, you know, the 300, 400, 500 thing, to me, it's very simple, but it's very powerful. You know, 300 batting average, 400 on base, 500 slugging. It just doesn't happen, like Tim said. And Edgar did that. So, you know, you don't have to be Bill James or Brian Kenny or a Saber Whiz to figure that out. You know, that's pretty black and white. So, you know, that's a good place to start right there, and then you can work from there. But you know, and if you look at WAR, you know, wins above replacement, which is the stat of choice, it already penalizes you for being a DH. It has a built-in penalty, and he still comes up with great numbers. So, you know, comparative to other people at his position. Even if you look at other first basemen, you know, I heard Brian Kenny on this station earlier today talking about that. He compared him to first basemen, and he stacks up really well, even with the DH penalty. So,
you know, Larry, I'm curious. You go back to last summer when the Mariners retired his number at Safeco Field. It was certainly a deserving honor for Edgar, but the timing of it was not by, in my eyes, not by mistake. I mean, this was some, or by coincidence. I mean, this was a very smart, strong, wise move by the Mariners. You could really kind of see, whether it be through social media or what have you, the ripple effect of the Edgar buzz that came out of the Northwest over that weekend in the summer. And I'm kind of curious between that and then the strong overtures of the Mariners, public relations department when it comes to Edgar. I mean, it is opened eyes. Did you see anything with the number retirement really to kind of put Edgar above the fold? For, I know it might only sound like a weekend, but I mean, this was a big deal in Seattle, obviously, a big deal in franchise history. I'm curious how much that kind of went to with sending some shockwaves through baseball, even for a small moment, but with that, what kind of lasting impact that might have on some guys?
Yeah, you know, I think it helped. I think it's sort of like drops of water in the cup that's filling up. You know, the award named after him, the retirement of the number, the the articles, the stats the Mariners have put out that are very persuasive, the testimonials from people like Randy Johnson and Ken Griffey Jr. and Mariano Rivera, you know, all the pitchers who have said that he's the toughest guy they faced, as you mentioned earlier. I think that all builds a case, and I think that when some writers see so many other writers voting for Edgar, they think, well, what am I missing here? And they give it a closer look, and that's how it kind of builds this momentum of its own. And that could work against you, and it did earlier. And then once you start it rolling in the right direction, it works for you. And you know, the final thing is, even if he falls just short this year, next year is going to be his 10th and final year on the ballot. And history has shown that there's a big jump that final year for guys who are close, because writers realize this is it. This is your final chance. You know, Burt Blylevin, Orlando Cepeda, those are guys who got in either on their last or next to last and made huge jumps because, you know, it's the moment of reckoning. You know, if you've been putting it off, you can't do it anymore. And people tend to get the benefit of the doubt. And, I'm confident he's going to get. It's going to be so exciting next Wednesday because, you know, with Ken Griffey Jr., we knew for sure Jr. was going to get in. It was a matter of whether he was going to be, the only suspense was he going to be unanimous. Now with Edgar, I honestly don't know whether he's going to get in. It's going to be awfully close, but even if he doesn't get in, I think he's going to be so close that no one has ever gotten that high and not gotten in. So that's why I'm just so optimistic right now.
Is there one thing about the process you would change?
I think I would eliminate the rule of 10. The baseball writers proposed, I think, increasing it to 12, and that was turned down by the Hall of Fame. But, you know, I like the binary vote where you the idea where you vote, is he a Hall of Famer, yes or no, and there's no limits, because if you think a guy's a Hall of Famer, I'm not sure why you have to be limited. But, you know, we've talked... seems like we talk about this every year, and I mentioned this point, but, you know, the ballots get clogged because you have the guys who have had some taint of steroids who aren't quite getting in, but they're staying on the ballot. So, you know, the Bonds and the Clemens and the Ramirez's and the Sosa's, those guys. So as long as you have that, it's for some people, it's hard to limit it to 10. And if that has hurt people like Edgar and Larry Walker, Fred McGriff, and guys like that, I think if there was an unlimited ballot, would have been in by now. So I think that's one thing that I would at least look at.
Well, Larry, you start throwing around words like binary. We think we're talking with Dr. Lorena Martin again. Okay, so go easy on us. So we're still recovering, okay? Hey, Stoney, this...
As far as I know, I might have completely misused that. So.
Larry, it is always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for the time.
All right, I had fun. Thanks.
There's Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. Good chat as always. Hey, well, now's the time to get on board for the 2018 season as a Mariners season ticket holder. Whether you're looking to spend quality time with the family and friends or have more face time with your employees and clients, Mariners season tickets provide unmatched value and versatility. You can visit mariners.com/18 for more information. And hey, we got a lot more to wrap things up. We've referenced the idea of maybe a six-man rotation. We'll hear Jerry DePoto talk about whether or not that will happen for the Mariners in 2018. That's coming up after this timeout.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Hey, good news. Single-game tickets are on sale now, which means you can lock in your seats to some of the biggest games of the year, including opening night, kids opening day, fireworks nights, and big matchups against the Yankees, Dodgers, and many more. Get ready for Mariners baseball at Safeco Field when you visit mariners.com for tickets. Well, we've had a fine hot stove show here tonight, and you know there have been some interesting points raised, including the conversation, guys, of the potential for a six-man rotation, whether that be maybe becoming kind of an industry norm. Maybe we'll find out. But it was interesting that Jerry DePoto recently actually talked about how they're already internally discussing the fact that this could be a very real possibility for the Mariners this season.
In all likelihood, we will be carrying eight. It's a matter of how frequently, if at all, we run more than a five-man rotation. There may be a period of time during the course of the year where we carry a six-man rotation in order to ease the innings load on the pitchers. And We do feel like it's some combination of the five starters we presently project, in addition to whatever comes to pass with Andrew Moore, with Marco Gonzalez, with Ariel Miranda, whatever contributions they make, and multi-inning relievers like we just mentioned with Nicasio and Phelps and Rumbelo and Altuvilla, it gives us the ultimate flexibility in what we're looking for in our pen or on our pitching staff, and allows us to manage the innings. We're looking at innings as a total number, and how can we start peeling off some of that total innings number as the season goes along. And you might find 50 or 60 of them disappear in the form of a reliever, and another 150 disappear with a starter, but we're not going to put the burden of 225 on a single pitcher. That's not the way the game works anymore.
And for full context, at the very start of that, when he says carrying eight, he's referring to carrying eight relievers in the Mariners' bullpen, is how things obviously line up for this year. But this is interesting. I don't know if there are many other general managers who are speaking at this time of year about the very real likelihood that could happen to their team at some point over the course of the season.
I think you're going to see it. I think especially with the way bullpens are going right now and how important they are, and we've seen what the innings can do. I think that you're going to see it. Not everybody, maybe. Maybe more days off will help these guys manage that a little bit more. But how valuable is somebody like Felix, who had been throwing 220, 230 innings for 10 years, when that guy comes back around again, how valuable is he going to be to an organization, and what's that going to cost? We were talking about the free agents that are out there right now having a tough time getting signed.
I believe the Rangers are doing it too. I don't know if it's a full-on six or if it's going to be just kind of when you get into those long stretches. It's a very different schedule this year,
right,
which will play into it, which should hopefully help with the off days that they have. But, yeah, options play into it too. They've got some guys they don't have a lot of flexibility with right now, but I think it is the biggest thing, get the best out of them. And you've got guys that have kind of showed that I think rest does benefit them some. So this could be a big plus for the Mariners. A lot of the moves that we haven't seen on the field, I think they might be doing some interesting things, kind of controlling things behind the scenes that might benefit and might ultimately add up to some wins.
I know, Shannon, that you pencil it out all the time. When you look at this club, and it looks like we're going with 13 pitchers, the five starters and the eight in the bullpen, if they're going to be a couple of guys out in that pen that will be the spot starter, or they will bring in just to hold those innings back and look for them to go three or four innings in an outing?
I think that there'll be a couple of guys. I think one of the interesting guys that they brought in was Nick Rumbelo, who has pitched a lot of games, two innings. And you heard about them trying to turn somebody into a Davinsky-type model. And Max Posey is now back to a starter role, so it's not going to be him. I don't think it's going to be a long guy. I think it's going to be more – I think they like the variety that they have down in the pen. I think it'll just probably be another arm.
So a collective group of guys that can go two, possibly three innings.
Yeah.
I mean, look at David Phelps, right? Phelps, before the injury, this was a guy who could certainly go multiple innings for you. I mean, that was one of the big lures for getting David Phelps.
I think, honestly, it's going to be more guys that can go around, too. I don't think we're going to see a lot of the three.
And Juan Nicasio as well. Nicasio is a guy who can work multiple innings as well. So, interesting stuff there from the general manager. We'll see at what point, if at any point, this upcoming season, the Mariners will go to a six-man rotation. But as Mike was saying, you look at the schedule, especially in the first month of the season. The off days are very beneficial to the Mariners, and you would think would be for other teams as well, as that would work out. Well, glad you could join us tonight for the Hot Stove. We are, this one's in the books. We had a good one. Remember, you can always find the podcast of this online, mynorthwest.com. You can get the full replays of each and every Hot Stove show. We'll be with you again next week. Our big thanks to Larry Stone, most recently, Andrew Moore as well, Dr. Lorena Martin. Very fascinating as well, and Dan Altuvilla. So for Shannon Dreher, Mike Flowers, I'm Aaron Goldsmith, and for Kevin Kremen as well, good night.